How's it going, mate? Thanks for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure, brother. Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk about your illustrious career from the very beginning. Might have some little surprises for you right up to now. JJ Perry is a stunt coordinator, fight choreographer, been a stuntman for many years. You've been through the whole thing, right? From the lowly stuntman right up to the top, right, JJ?
Right, brother. That's right. But being a stuntman for me was one of the coolest, funnest jobs I ever had. You just show up and do some wild stuff with your friends and go drink beer that night. Wake up in time, go do it again, get paid. No responsibility, just kick ass.
So just briefly then, JJ, can you tell the audience what your martial arts background is and how you got involved in Hollywood and the stunt world?
Sure. So I started martial arts back in 1975 in Louisville, Kentucky. And in Texas, I was living in both places, moving back and forth from my grandparents'. And I started with Taekwondo, ITF Taekwondo and WTF Taekwondo. I was very much immersed in that. Back in the 70s in America, there wasn't a ton of different styles of martial arts. You had Shotokan, Kyokushin, Judo, Taekwondo, and then they had some stuff that they called Kung Fu, but I'm not 100% sure it was. I feel like it was more like stuff that people saw at the Kung Fu theater. And we're trying to emulate it. So the Taekwondo schools that I went to were the one in Texas. My master was also a U.S. head coach, so I was kind of exposed to a high level of that WTF style very early, and getting to see a lot of fighters come, national team players come down, and also a lot of guys like come up from Mexico, and so I was exposed to a high level of Taekwondo very early in life, which was very good for me. I was lucky.
Did you compete?
I was very competitive, probably from 76 up until like 93 was my last competition. And in 1986, I joined the Army on the Elite Athlete Program for Taekwondo and competed. I was stationed in Korea for a year and a half and competed there quite a bit. I was there during the Olympics. And yeah, it was, I got to go to Japan and compete. I got to compete a little bit in Thailand as well because you could take a military hop back then for very cheap. And it was a blessing. It was very hard, like for a kid from a small town in Texas to go just jump on a plane and go train somewhere like that. There's no internet back then. So if you wanted to learn something, you had to go there and learn it, and that's kind of what we did. And the Elite Athlete Program for combative sports in the 80s, like the boxing team in the Army, there were two gold medals in the Olympics. You had Ray Mercer, and I can't remember the name of the other guy who won a gold medal. But they were putting a lot of money into all combative sports. They were trying to get as many competitors from combative sports on a national level in the Army or in the Navy or in the Air Force or Marines, because I guess they saw the value in having that kind of person in their service. So yeah, and then when I was in the Army, I got stationed in Fort Ord, California, which is Central Coast. It's right below San Jose, and I was competing up and down that coast. And when I got back from Korea, everybody looked like they were moving in slow motion in America when I was fighting them. So I was wreaking havoc up and down the coast. And that's where I met a lot of guys. When I was coming down to LA to fight, I was meeting guys that were in the movie business, and they were like, dude, you got to get down here. Like, money's falling off of trees. And we shoot blanks. We don't shoot real bullets. You should come down and check it out. And I did. And that's how I got my, actually came down and auditioned for a Van Damme movie called Lionheart back
Oh,
in.
that's one of his best.
Yeah. Remember the guy in the pool
Oh,
with the
yeah.
singlet? Yeah,
Yeah.
I auditioned that guy. And
So it was a bit of a lucky escape then, otherwise we would have all seen you in your singlet.
listen, man, it's I'm a thing of beauty, bro. Thing of beauty. It'll bring tears to your eyes. I remember when I met him, like, because he was there at that audition, and we auditioned at Frank Dukes' school in the Valley.
Oh, so he was still tight with Frank Dukes at this point
Yeah,
then, because didn't they
we were at
fall
his
out?
school. It was yeah, it was they had a falling out, but it was at his school on Laurel Canyon, I think it was, or Coldwater Canyon. And I had driven all night. I'd taken a 3-day pass. I'd driven all night from Fort Ord, waited in line, slept in my car for a couple hours, waited in line and ripped. And yeah, they were like, oh, you're great, my friend. We're going to put you in the movie. And so I go back to my base, and I was like, told my first sergeant, I was like, hey, can I have a month off to do this movie? He goes like, you ain't going to do no movie, boy. We going to the field. We got work to do. And my
Oh.
Hollywood dreams were dashed.
Well, that's a shame because personally, I think that Lionheart is one of his best films.
Right
Love
on,
it.
right on, right
Absolute
on.
love.
But that was my first taste of the movie business, and I'd already sworn in, so I couldn't get out of going to the Army at that point. I was like, oh, damn, I blew it. So there was my next 4 years. I was out there chasing the dream and ended up in Hollywood, ended up here seeking fame and fortune.
Okay, well, tell me then, how long was it before you ended up doing this film? You see it?
So that's like 95. And the funniest thing, oh, look at that chest shave too.
Yeah.
So that was like 95 and we shot that in Sri Lanka. Now back that up again. Can you back that up for me?
Yeah.
So the guy I'm sitting next to my left.
Oh, I see him. Yeah.
That's the house.
Oh,
and the
hat.
The reason his shoulder is covered is because he got his collarbone broken working on a Seagal movie. Damn it. He was with the Damon Keene and Ivory Wayans.
Glimmer Man.
He got his collarbone broke on Glimmer Man, and I replaced him. And but we did the reshoots in L.A., and I was kind of fat and out of shape when we shot it in Sri Lanka, but I was all shaved up and tan and buff when we did this. So it was kind of a contrast. I get in the ring, and I'm a little sloppy. When I'm in the city in the stands, I'm like a little, I'm like a Abercrombie Fitch model. Look at that.
So we're seeing some of the WTF here, aren't we?
Yeah, for sure. A little switch step. That's what we used to call tricking in the 70s.
Yeah, there you go. That was a good move.
Yeah, that's it. Just saw Daniel Bernhardt this morning. He was doing jiu-jitsu over at 8711. He's a good friend now.
Yeah. Yeah. Bloodsport 3, is this?
Yeah, I think that's 3.
So what were you thinking when he was jumping up? You were thinking, this is so, he looks so amazing. I'm just going to wait here and get kicked. Bang.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I didn't choreograph it. I just said, hey, what do you want me to do? And they said, you're going to get flying side kicked in the face. And I was like, cool.
So when
that's my school. I used to have that school in Inglewood.
Okay. And there's Lauren Avedon.
That's right. King of the kickboxers.
Yeah.
A dear friend. That's, you know, Scott, that's one of the great things about being in this business. You know, like, even though we're doing a bunch of scripted fake stuff, but you make a lot of dear friends and it's a lot of fun. You know, it's almost more fun to do it in the movies because you're getting paid a ton of dough and you're doing it with your friends and you might get hurt, but you're not going to get knocked out or shot. You know, it's like, so it's a lot of fun and you make lifelong friends, which has been one of the big blessings for me in this business.
But how come you're just bowling up down the dojang with your cagoule on and tracksuit trousers?
Because it's my school. I can do what I want.
Tell us about this, JJ. This is Mortal Kombat, the TV show, is it?
That's right. That's me doing an old IDF forum called Gay Beck. I did the first two movies. You know, I was very lucky to get to on the first movie to double Johnny Cage. And then we did the second movie, which we shot in England at Leavesden, where we just shot Fast and Furious 9. And it was cool to go back there after all these years and see it. And also in Thailand and in Jordan.
Hang on, he made you go limp.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, no, he took my strength. Just like my mother-in-law. It's actually my mother-in-law in that costume stealing my spirit.
Stealing your soul. Swallow your soul.
Flawless victory.
Yeah. You were in the first two Mortal Kombats then. Sub-Zero in any of them? Or?
No, so I doubled Johnny Cage in the first one. It was very cool. Like, we did the reshoots. And then when they did the second one, I was Scorpion and then Cyrax, and I doubled a bunch. You know, I was in a lot of the costumes. But we shot it in 3 countries. And like I said, we shot it in the first part of it was in London, in Leavesden. And that's exactly where we just shot Fast and Furious 9. That's kind of when, you know, I was a young stuntman, you know, chasing the dollar, enjoying myself. It was a lot of fun back then, you know, like, didn't make a ton of money, but we were going to cool places with a lot of friends. Came to London, got to meet Ray Park, Buster Reeves, Nicky Berwick. You know, there was a lot of rock stars on that, and got to work with Keith Hitabayashi, Keith Cook, an old friend of mine. And that's the first movie.
Keith Cook is incredible kicker, one of the very best.
Bro, so the first time I saw him was at the Battle of Atlanta in 1984. And I didn't used to do the forms. I used to go fight. But I saw him do with a staff. He's in the ring, and he rips a staff around, and he does a Hong Kong twist, with, you know, a Sun Bai Lu, a 360. And I'd never seen that before. Nobody had.
Back in the day.
He just come back from China with Roger Tung. We were like, how do you do that? I was like, you were sideways in the air and you turned and you had a stick in your hand, and because I'm kind of a redneck. And I was like, God damn, that was a sick ass move you just pulled there. But like being able to work with him and train with him and was a real blessing. And he's a real good big bro. He always was. Funny thing about Mortal Kombat 2, before I let you go there real quick, is that was Tony Jaa's first movie.
I was going to ask you about this, and because I was talking to Tony about this, and I reminded him that you told me that they called him Hollywood.
He was standing under a tree branch when we all met him. They had it was Sang's stunt team. Sang is the big stunt coordinator down in Thailand. Dear friend, another, you know, lucky to work with fella. And Sang was like, hey, you guys got to check this kid out. He brought him up from Bangkok. He brought like 6 or 7 of the stunt guys up. But he was standing under a tree, and the branch must have been 10 feet in the air. And you know that wicker ball game they play, this, it's called Sukhulat. Yeah. It's like volleyball with their feet. He just lifts a knee, and then 540s his kick. It smacks this branch 10 feet high. And I didn't know what to say. You know, I thought, I'm looking for the crane. Where's the wire? How did that just happen? And he's just nice, you know, he's a kid, nice kid, smiling, giggling, you know. So we just named him Hollywood after that and let him kick the shit out of all of us.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. He's got like, he's slight, he's small, but when you feel him, it's like he's dense. He's made out of different atoms, that guy.
I feel like guys like you and him, when God was making tigers, he goes, oh shit, I'm supposed to make men that day. And then he churned you two guys out, guys like you out there. You know, you got a lot of guys that are just genetically and physically on a different wavelength. You know, they can just hang time and accurate and powerful with either foot or either hand. And you fall in that category too, my brother. So it's a long story. So we get there on a location scout. We're going to do this thing where we're driving in a Jeep and I'm handcuffed. And then I kick the steering wheel, or Sean William Scott's character kicks the steering wheel of the car. The Jeep goes off a cliff, dives. We go down this mountain, roll, 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 tumble, 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 over a waterfall. And then the Jeep comes through and lands between us. Now, in saying that, that's what it sounded like we were going to do on the plane. As soon as we get there, I realized, you know, like looking at the mountain that we're going to go down and seeing how it was all set up, I was like, wow. And we shot that for like 4 days straight, like 13 times down that mountain every day. And it was all in.
Times every day.
Yeah, yeah. And Marco Zaror was another double. It was Tonawai Reed and I were the two 1Xs. And then Marco Zaror and Paul Eliopoulos, a tremendous stuntman, Paul, and Tonawai, amazing bros, and Marco as well. They were, the four of us each did it like 13 times. And then, you know, going, getting smacked up, doing insert shots of us running and jumping off a mini tramp and smacking and punching off of trees. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of prep done to that mountain. It's pretty much lava rock and trees.
So you just got as padded up as best you could and just went for it.
Said a Hail Mary and just asked Tonawai, being at 260 pounds, please don't land on me, bro. And, you know, and you say Hail Mary and you just say, go for it, you know, you just go for it.
It is impressive. It's an amazing stunt, and you can absolutely feel the pain watching that.
Funny story, like the next morning after we did the initial tumble-tumble, which was one of our biggest days, the very first day, it was a Saturday when we did it. Sunday morning, I get a call from Tonawai, who's used to play football for University of Hawaii, The Rock's cousin, just a super genetic freak of nature, big Samoan, cool, hard-as-nails cat, calls me at 8 a.m. and he goes, hey, brother, you want to go for a run and get pancakes? And I literally thought my spleen was out of my body, couldn't move. And I told him, yeah, I just came back from a run, bro. I think I'll sleep a little longer.
Was he okay then?
Dude, not a scratch. I think he went out and partied that night and then got up early and ran the next day.
So what was worse, JJ, day two or day three?
Day three.
Day three is always worse, isn't it? And I'm talking from like a martial arts standpoint.
You know how it is. Like day one, your pride gets in the – after day one, day two, the beginning of day two, your pride gets in the way and says, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to make myself. I don't care. But by day three, genetics and impact take over. And no matter how much pride gets in the way, it's like, oh, God, that hurts. Oh, God, that hurts. Oh, God.
Waking up on day three is not fun.
No. A lot of Tylenol and hope you're not leaking. And if you have any stitches, hopefully you don't pop and don't leak on you. Oh, check it out, dude. Here's an old picture, another prop that I brought. Who's that, dude?
That's you, isn't it?
Yeah, when I was like 14.
So is that all one in one day?
We fight juniors and then we fight men's at night.
Wow.
My master was relentless. You know, he was like, don't care. Don't care if you knock out. Don't care if your hand broken. You fighting. Yes, sir.
Well, I was talking to Lauren Avedon the other day, and he was telling me about the first time he met you, and you had a bit of a spar. He said you almost knocked him out with an axe kick.
That was my weak leg, bro. I'm kidding. Lauren's a dear friend, man, and he's a tremendous martial artist. You know, like some of the guys that, you know, like I said, the guys that we meet, like, come across, and, you know, the Gary Daniels, the Mike Jai Whites, you know, it's just amazing. We're all bound by this. We're karate bums. We're martial artists. We love it, you know, and getting to play guns and play fight when I'm 53. And I don't ever need to grow up, dog. I don't ever have to grow up. And I urge everyone listening, don't do it. It's overrated. Yeah. Don't do it.
How would you?
My wife is raising two kids, 1 8-year-old and 1 53-year-old, and one of them's never going to grow up.
Yeah, so Undisputed 2, that's when I first met you. I was hungry to do something special, and I know Mike was there to do some good work. And I don't know where you were at, but you certainly did something special. Was it a time for you where maybe you wanted to prove, you know, be a good fight coordinator? I'm not sure how much you'd done before then.
I'd been working quite a bit. They would hire me as a stuntman. I was getting hired all the time as a lead double or a double. But I would come in and choreograph my own stuff all the time, or choreograph for everybody. It was just never getting the credit or getting paid for it. And, you know, I was grateful, like totally grateful. I've always been. I never thought I would ever be doing this work. And, like, you know, but that was kind of the way it went back then, you know, like you just took the job, and I was grateful to have it. And a lot of my bros, like, you know, like the Chad Sahelski, Dave Leach, Mike Gunter, Marcus Young, Garrett Warren, they were already coordinators. They'd already become coordinators. Brad Martin. I mean, I can go down the list, but they'd already become stunt coordinators and second directors and fight coordinators. And I was working with them and for them and for everyone and enjoying myself. But this came at a time I was doing a movie called Ultraviolet. I was prepping it in L.A., a Mila Jovovich movie. And they were getting ready to leave for China. And I'd worked on it for like 3 months prepping. Like we pre-vised and choreographed the fights. I didn't go to China. I just stayed and did the prep part. And I'd worked with Isaac Florentine. I'd met him years before, a dear friend, and a big bro, a mentor, a sensei, et cetera. You know, like he had a lot of influence in my style of directing and my motivations. I learned a lot of things from Isaac. While I was doing Ultraviolet, I saw videos. Mitch Gould had videos of you from the movie you did with Andy Chang.
Special Forces. It wasn't Andy Chang. It was Yuji, but Special Forces.
That's right. And I saw the video and I was like, oh, smooth. He's badass. How tall? I thought you were like 5'2 when I saw the videos. Oh, he's got to be 5'2. No, bro, he's your size. I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, oh, God. And sure enough, Isaac calls me and says, hey, JJ, I'm going to do this movie in Bulgaria with Mike Jai White, who likes you, he's a friend of yours, and this kid, Scott Atkins, who's amazing. Do you want to come? And I was like, you know, trying to play it cool. I was like, yeah, I'd love to come. But inside I was going, oh, my God, it's like a coordinator, a choreographer's dream come true. To have two hitters like you guys, you know, like a lot of times, Scott, when we're in the action business, I spend a lot of time shooting around an actor or an actress's inabilities. You know, you're starting pitcher, your lead is how good they are is how good you're going to be. And then you have to be clever about how you cover it. With guys like you and Mike, I just put the camera where it belongs, where the action becomes a star of what we're doing. There's no tricks.
No limits.
It's what we're featuring is the technical skill of both of you, in which I was super, super proud of Undisputed 2. I mean, it was like one of my first times up to bat, getting to direct a little second unit. Isaac kind of leaned on me. We experimented with that ramping, with shooting at 88 and switching it back to 22. When we were in Bulgaria, I saw that, what's his name, Robbie something. He was a boy band guy from England. But he had a music video out of him throwing a bunch of American cheerleaders that looked like zombies up in the air, but they were ramping it.
Yeah.
And then I showed Isaac. I said, let's do this in fights, bro. And he was like, it'd be great, JJ, it's great. And we came up with some really cool stuff.
A bit resistant at first, but as soon as you did it, I mean, he's never stopped with that style now. That's like Isaac Florentine style now. I remember hitting Silvio with this kick.
Oh,
it actually hurt my foot.
And it was take two. I made you do it. I made it. The first one was good, but I was like, I need you to get into a little bit fatter, Scott. I said, Silvio, you good? And he had already kicked him in the neck proper on that backflip side kick. You'd already necked him proper. And God bless Silvio. He's a tremendous martial artist and a great sport and a lovely guy.
This is the job. This is the job. Sometimes you just got to take it.
Brother, sometimes you're pitching and sometimes you're catching. And Silvio, game bred, we had no problem, took it like a man. And it made a beautiful sound, too, because – and Isaac was like, oh, that was a good hit. And I was like, well, it's because he hit him. He smacked the fist up.
This is typical JJ Perry stuff, mixing a bit of Lucha Libre in there.
Right.
That's classic JJ. And then, you know, what you would do is like – you and Isaac – obviously, that backflip kick is a difficult kick, and then the next kick is a difficult kick. But you guys are like, we'll do them both in the same shot. And I'm like, what? I don't know if I could do that. Push me to be even better. But what's cool about this kick is the fact that I accidentally hit his hand, right? That was an accident.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And I gave him a mouthful of water to spit out, too, when he hit you. He was slippery, and I wasn't 100% sure you were going to be able to get your foot fat on him. So we needed something to spice that up. I think that was like take four. And at the end of the day, we were all running out of gas. Yeah. You know, you were going to go no matter what. I'll never forget that movie. You know, that was, like I said, a perfect storm. And that was the first time, like, I had Isaac kind of believed in me and leaned on me. And, you know, like, I didn't have a lot of people believing in me back in the day. I didn't believe in myself a lot, you know, so getting that opportunity and seeing how it all works and even picking up a camera here or there and operating and, you know, just getting in there, getting your hands dirty and being a part of it creatively and executing it, sitting in the editing room. I learned a lot of that movie. You know, Isaac was a great teacher and very opened to everything.
But your choreography, JJ, I love it. And I actually think that it suits me because it's very violent and it's very vicious. And when you hit, you really hit with massive intent. You know, it's vicious, but mixed in with the flash. And actually, you and Larnell Stovall, I think your choreography suits me the best. Sorry, Tim Mann, which is great, but it's the viciousness.
So, you know, like, especially now after UFC has shown up in 1993, now that martial arts was a big mystery, you know, until 1993. Everybody thought their style was the best because they did it and that's what their master told them. After 1993 and we saw MMA, we all understood like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's a salad bar. You better be good at everything. You got to be good on the ground. You got to be good on your feet. And when MMA became so popular, everybody's watching it. It's hard to fake, you know, the movie Stack Punch. Look, this is a movie hit. Yeah, it's a hit. It's a hit. It's a hit. But it's only on the overs. It's either over me or over you. So for a face punch, you never see a profile real face punch. Very rarely do you see that. So I always think, if you have an impact from the neck down, full blast kicks to the body. You can't cheat that. That's for real. Or a big throw. You have a big kinetic throw with a big kinetic impact at the bottom. That's very visceral and real. So I try to limit the punches to the face so it's not this big slugfest of things that aren't really happening. Instead, right. Impact, real kinetic impacts that you can't cheat in camera. There's no CGI that can help you with that. There's nothing. There's no way to cheat that. Only real impact. And I feel like people that have been watching MMA for so long, and that's the majority of our target market, the market that we are catering to, all are huge MMA fans. And in saying that, you know, we have to, I really rethought the way that I did choreography when I first got in the movie business. You know, I'd say, okay, I'm going to do a spin kick and a sweep, and it's going to be this. But now I started to think more technical. Now it's reality plus 10% or 20% or whatever it is. The Lucha Libre, of course, is fantasy. That's Lucha Loco Libre because I'm from Texas, so I'm a little partial to that stuff. But in saying that, like moving forward now to that John Wick style, let's talk about evolution. You had Bruce Lee first, and impressive, amazing, but shot very standard, yeah. Wide over. Now you had this kid called Jackie Chan show up in the late 70s, and in the mid 80s he starts directing, and he changes the action movie business forever, because not only does his choreography, where he's not the hero, he doesn't just blast through people. You're rooting for him because he's getting his ass kicked and he's coming up with clever ways to solve it. But it's how he filmed it, how he took control of the camera. 1, 2, 3, cut, overlap. 1, 2, 3, cut, overlap. 1, 2. So it became a rhythm. And this is a style that you were used to on like Special Forces, which I am a huge fan of. But I didn't want to be redundant. I wanted to kind of create a different thing, longer takes and let it breathe. That was always my thing, especially if you could let them. But after Jackie Chan, think about it. What was the next craze after Jackie Chan? In America came the ninja craze. And then after that, after the ninja craze, and then you had Van Damme show up. Then you had Seagal show up until the late 90s. And then what happened? The Matrix. The Matrix brought it all back. So that was kind of the evolution.
The first time that we really saw in an American movie, Hong Kong style action done the way it's supposed to be done.
That was
groundbreaking. I thought, well, this is it now. They're never going to go back. But they regressed.
Well, I'll tell you what they did. What happened? Ong Bak happened. And I was almost sad the first time I saw Matrix. Like all my friends, like Chad Stahelski, a dear friend, one of my bros, was on the Matrix. And I remember seeing it at the theater and calling him and saying, dude, that was awesome. But I was almost sad. I was like, man, this changes everything. It's going to be Kung Fu. We're going to be doing Kung Fu on wires. It's not going to be, you know, like it's just different now. When Ong Bak happened, I remember looking at that $1 million budget movie, $1 million, and seeing cool shots wide with big impacts. And I thought, wow, that was refreshing.
It was back to like the Bruce Lee style again, really. The camera work, very basic, because all you had to do was film Tony Jaa, and he's hitting people for real. So just film that.
And I saw Ong Bak in Bulgaria waiting for you to show up from London on Undisputed 2. It was the first time I saw Ong Bak.
Oh, really?
And I almost regretted watching it because, you know, how like when you see something, you're influenced by it.
Yeah.
So typically, I try not to watch movies, action movies, while I'm working on a movie because I don't want something to slip in there that I regurgitate or I just, oh, we're going to do the old. I'm trying not to ever say, let's just do the old. And the older I get now, the more I'm less worried about a move and more concerned about sequences and storytelling within the action. But that's kind of for me, Ong Bak was a big... I exhaled when I saw Ong Bak. I thought, okay, this is great.
Back to the roots.
That's right.
So the wire work did stay around for quite a while. And it was like shocking when something like, I've got to throw some people under the bus now. When I saw Romeo Must Die, they brought Jet Li over. And, you know, it's not like it's Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It's set in America and he's playing American football and he's flying around on these wires. It was absolutely absurd.
We had Yen Wuping and Da Xing and his whole team, Pong, Fish, Tiger, who are amazing martial artists and great guys. But we had them running almost every show in America for like 3 years. They were doing all the action, all the shows. So they all started to kind of look the same. You know what I mean? So when that started to fizzle out a little bit, we all kind of exhaled and went, okay, cool.
The next thing that really revolutionized action cinema fight style was the Bourne movies, right? And that, in my opinion, really set us back. I don't know what your view on it is, but for
me, I wasn't a fan of that shaky cam, cutty, you know, seven cameras rolling, 2 seconds, you know, 2 seconds cut, 2 seconds cut. Like, your brain can't process. All you'll see is shuffle, 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 book in the neck, shuffle, 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 pen in the arm, you know, like, there's only bullet points. For me, it's like, set it up, tell a story. Tell the story of the fight. What's the struggle? How is he, if he gets in trouble, how do you solve that problem? Tell the story and then show some big impacts and some visual things. And you know, like it's also the box that you're in. So we're in the, let me see if I can trace the box real quick. The box goes like that and it has four corners and four walls. It's the shapes and rhythms and sizes that you play in that box that are going to make it cool. You know, like if you look at the old Hong Kong stuff, the cadence of that is like, yut, 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 yut. I'm a bigger fan of jazz music. Doom, 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 doom. Change the rhythm. So it's not just doom, 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 doom. And, you know, the Bourne for me was almost, not knocking it, great films, made a ton of dough.
Brilliant films.
When I watched the action, I got confused. I got really confused. It almost gave me a headache watching it. Like I was trying to figure out, what's he doing? David Leitch and Jeff Imada and John Eusebio, who were all members of our clique, 8711, Chad Stahelski, all had a hand in that Bourne style of combat, which I thought was sick. It was super cool. It's the way that it was captured to me that was a bit disheveled. And I think that a lot of people really liked it because they didn't understand what was going on. You know, maybe that's something that they liked. It was kind of like fight choreography for ADD, but I thought that the car chases were great. The fights were, there was big impacts. You just don't see how it happened.
Yeah, the car chases, that kind of thing works brilliantly anyway. Do you think part of the reason was, you know, obviously Keanu Reeves put a lot of effort into The Matrix and he did all that training, you know, 6 months training, whatever it was. And obviously they pulled that off brilliantly. And then it became, okay, actors can now do what the old 80s action stars were doing. We're going to train our actors to do this. But really, they didn't really realize it's terribly hard work, isn't it? I mean, you've got to train. 6 months training is what Keanu Reeves did, right? So the shaking of the camera was a way to hide the shortcomings of the performer.
It's exactly correct. And, you know, like, and it's also an easy way to hide the stunt double, like when the camera's moving all over the place. That was a thing. Like, so I'm going to say this. How many years have you been doing martial arts, Scott?
Oh, it's good for you now. So I started when I was 10 and I'm 44.
So you can't just show up and work out for 6 months and be a master. You can show up for 6 months and be proficient. You need to be, as a person who manages the training of a lot of actors for different movies, you have to be aware of that. Like when we're doing the movie Warrior with Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton or Haywire or John Wick, you know, you have to be realistic. Like even on the John Wick movies, Keanu learned like 6 throws and 7 transitions, jiu-jitsu transitions, but like really good at those throws and use those in variations. Like it's not, you know what I mean? You have to be specific and very, very, very clever how you do it. I think that the training of actors is important because they're getting paid a ton of money and we're trying to show them how to be bad. I mean, the best way to fake being a badass is by just being a badass, right? He is a legitimate stud, cool guy, great with guns. We took him out to that range. He could compete in 3-gun. I don't know if he could officially compete in a judo contest. It wouldn't surprise me if he could. He could probably compete in some jiu-jitsu tournaments. But he's a gem of a human, and he works really hard. You know, he was a real pleasure. It's not easy. It's painful. The first couple of weeks suck. And dieting, training. But, you know, like we do it. We approach the training very similar to the way that any of us approach fighting. You know you got a tournament. You know you're going to fight in 2.5 months. So there's the making weight. There's the cardio to get in shape. There's the sparring. The same idea, the same principles apply. Like they're doing 2-a-days, two sessions a day, and they're getting nutrition. We've put them up with the nutritionist. Then there's also body shaping involved. So they've got a body sculptor that works with them to get them as ripped as they can be. And all of that has to be done in a way, you know, for a 52 or 53-year-old actor not to get injured, but show up on set on the day they're supposed to get down to be as ready as they can be, injury-free and ripped.
And peak condition.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you miss that by a week, they're going to be on the backside of that peak. And now you're trying to wake them up with coffee, trying to coax them into it. You know,
I was talking to Stallone about this. I mean, you know, the old days of the Rocky films and everything. And what he said to me, and I found it really interesting, is he was talking about doing those fight scenes and putting himself through the ringer and it being so difficult to do. But what you've got to take into account is that he's severely malnutritioned. He's dieted himself down to a point where he's almost, and so you're going to pick up more injuries. You're going to get sick.
What I always tell him, I said, look, what we do is last forever. You know, what you do now lasts forever. It's not my, look, I'm not going to be buried in the graveyard of shame or honor. It's not my face on it. The graveyard will have the tombstone will be yours, my friend.
Yeah.
So embrace the training and be as good as you can or don't, and we'll double you and it won't be great. You know, like just do your best.
In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Goodbye.
That was fun to shoot this. We had a good time.
She was awesome. Scared.
Kelly Hu was scared I was going to hit her, wasn't she?
Oh, what a gorgeous girl.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't hit that pretty face. Of course not. Oh, no. Very careful. And we had little Kimmy there to do most of it.
Yeah. She killed it. Like tough as a Canadian coffin nail. Jesus.
Yeah.
Like we wired her into this concrete pole in a minute where we just hoofed her. Remember that?
It was a hard hit.
Oh, it was nasty. It made that sound. That was a nice one there.
Well, that was
one page out of the Jackie Chan book. Insert shot of impact, hand in the shoe, cut to the wide shot of the back 3/4. Jackie Chan 101, everybody. Here we go. Here it comes. Bing. Front 3/4. Boom. Wire wrap. Here it goes. Goal!
That was a hard hit. Why did we come up with this video and what was the whole purpose behind it?
So part of my whole process is we come up with, you know, 15 or 20 like really iconic moves that we love. And then I find homes for them, you know, like that's part of it. And find some interesting shoe leather and story points that can kind of connect them. And, you know, like ideally you're doing stuff that no one's seen before, you know, hopefully it's new and fresh. And when you have a starting pitcher like you, and by the way, that's the very young, handsome and talented Sam Hargrave there, now yeah. Big director. And that's Dan Stevens as well. Two gems of humans and great friends of mine. Yes. They're very proud of what they've done and who they've become now. But yeah, just coming up with like a whole library of very cool moves or techniques and then finding homes for them. And having a starting pitcher like you is easy. You just find something that's new and challenging that maybe that we've done before, but then change it a bit and put it in a different context. And there it is, bro. Love the suicide kicks. Love the suicide kicks.
Well, this is what was great about you is like, I think I did this kick off the wall.
Yep.
You were like, well, why don't you do that off a person?
That's right.
I was like, is that possible? And that became like a bit of a signature move for me.
I love it.
It was you that convinced me that I could do a flash kick running off somebody's chest. Because I could do the flash kick like, you know, a gainer. But you were like, no, try and run off his chest and do it for undisputed. That's and right. I didn't know that I could do these things until you pretty much forced me to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know if you could do it either. And I was just hoping you wouldn't break your neck.
So, in order to save some money, we were going to put a stuntman in the spot. But our producer, Robert Bernacki, volunteered to do this gag himself because for fear of being over budget.
Robert, you okay?
He's in the zone right now, so we shouldn't disturb him. Push in on him.
One more. Good.
What I call taking one for the team.
We're doing a fight scene. Somebody might get kicked in the face. What's going to happen? Might get a tooth knocked out, might get their nose broke, might get a few stitches. Now I take you out to Fast and Furious 8 or 9 or Gemini Man. We're on the streets of Colombia or Cuba in motorcycles or in cars going 100 miles an hour with explosions. A little mistake there is a huge mistake. Mm-hmm. And having to manage that, like that's one of the things about being a stunt coordinator, you know, especially if you're doing action movies with vehicles and explosions where you're not on a green screen stage all day, you're out there actually doing stuff, is you're going to take big risks. But in doing that, you know, like you risk yourself enough times, it's like going to Vegas. You roll the dice enough times, you might roll snake eyes. So you have to hedge your bets. You know, you have to rely on your strengths, hire the best people you know how, the best people you know, and then create opportunities for them to succeed and manage those risks. Most of this was shot on a motorcycle camera by Regis Harrington was operating it. The camera itself weighed 180 pounds with a stabilizing head. It's a massive 3D 4K 120 frame rate camera. It's massive. So for him to manage that motorcycle this in this proximity,
the cameraman on the front of a motorbike.
No, it was a motorcycle with a camera with a remote head attached to it. But Regis is such an amazing motocross rider and camera operator. He knows where to put the camera at all times. He just knows. He's got a little bitty monitor, and he's got this electric bike that goes 0 to 60 in like a second and a half. This kid, that's Tony Carbajal. He really rode up on that wall. He really just rode up there and almost popped a wheelie. We all just flew off our feet. We were like, oh my God. I had a forklift on the other end to go down and grab him and bring him back down. It's amazing. But we were in Colombia, in Cartagena, which is a beautiful place. Really just shredding, going super fast, you know. And Ang Lee is a great friend, and you know, he hadn't really done any car chases or motorcycle chases before, so he really kind of just leaned on us and was super excited. It was a real blast to do this sequence. No stunt double for him. So that was Steven Soderbergh directing, and I'll tell you, we rehearsed this at 8711. It was John Eusebio, John Valera, Danny Hernandez, and then Gina. There was the whole 8711 crew was there for this to prep it. And Soderbergh, we're all huge fans of Steven Soderbergh, but he just doesn't really do action movies. So he just kind of shot we have a previs that's identical to this. Like he shot it shot for shot. I was there helping him. He didn't even have monitors, like because they don't shoot action. So he gave me this tiny clamshell. You know, he's like, hey, can you see it? And I'm like, oh, yeah, it looks like a hit, small screen hit. I don't know. It was a lot of fun. And then Fassbender, when he gets that, when he gets this thing smacked him in his face right here, before he did it, go ahead and pause for a second.
Yeah.
Before he did it, he goes, you know, and he's such a smooth, cool dude, like with the accent, you know, like he's good at everything he does. He can sing, he can play guitar, he can dance. Like, he's an amazing guy and a big fan. He comes to me and he goes, so mate, tell me what to do when the vase. And I was like, listen, bro, you don't want to look at it coming. In other words, when she grabs the vase, don't look or you're going to see the inside of the vase. Make sure you look straight and then she'll hit you high on the head. You don't want to get it in the ear either. First take, what does he do? She picks it up, he looks, and he goes, mate, I saw the inside of the vase, mate. And I was like, I told you not to look.
Was that the take that they used?
I don't think so. I think they used the one where she caught him on the side because it was a big reaction. It was a way big reaction when he got it in the chops. And then when she kicks him through the door,
was that him taking?
Yeah, it was him. No, that was him. There was a pad. I put a neoprene pad sleeve on the top of that table and soft set dressing there. And that couch had been gutted out to be a little bit lighter. But when she kicks him through the door, we were talking about maybe putting a wire on him. And I was like, Gina, you think you could keep him through the door? And she just looked at me and winked and she goes, watch this.
Oh, is that the one?
She just hoofed him, dude. And you see him trying to catch himself because he got kicked so hard, he tries to catch himself on the door.
Is it sugar glass?
Yeah, it's candy glass and balsa.
But he's got really good reactions, Fassbender. I like this bit now when he gets kneed.
Yeah, it's this. And I wanted to have her put her foot on his face and shove his head into the wall. But then I thought, okay, choose your battles. Because if you do that, he might not be around to do this push kick through the door. He might have his conscious removed.
Now, the camera work is, going back to what you're talking about, it's quite static in that. I wondered if it was a Steven Soderbergh request, but it was as the previs was.
It was shot for shot the previs. He was so stoked when he saw the previs. We talked about his vision of it. He said he was not a fan of the Bourne style, and we all agreed that we weren't either. Eusebio and Valera were there as well. So, I mean, we all kind of ingested all that. They were there on the we ingested that. And I think what we did turned out really, really good. But it was a lot of fun, man. Like, Soderbergh is one of my idols, like, as a director. He's one of those directors who can – he shoots it. He can shoot it, cut it. He lights it. Like, he's a well-versed filmmaker, good at everything he does. Like, he knows all aspects of the craft.
Soderbergh is that good that he predicted coronavirus. That's how good he is.
That's correct. Jesus.
And you once said to me, it's all about filling the frame with beautiful action.
That's right.
You said that to me, man. And that just makes perfect sense.
The frame is four corners and four walls. And it's what you do in those. Like, if it's not 3D, 3D means it's four corners and four walls, but in and out as well. I'm not a fan of 3D. Never have been. But in regular film, it's like it's not just the filling that frame, like put a toe over on this corner, put a hand over here, but it's also the rhythms and the sound. So if you close your eyes when you're watching a fight scene, close your eyes and listen. Because a lot of fights, some, like even Steven Soderbergh, there was no music over the fight scene with Gina Carano. Listen to that fight. Turn the volume up and close your eyes. And there's an interesting rhythm to that, which I felt was, it shapes and rhythms. But it was very, it really resonated with me. And the same with Undisputed 2. While we were doing Undisputed 2, Isaac, like I would stand there with Isaac, I said, Isaac, close your eyes and listen to it. And, you know, like we really explored a lot of that in these movies, you know, like. His mic style was very boxer friend. It was very boxer. So it was 1-2, 1-2-3-4, you know, and yours was like 1-2-3, 1-2-3, big hook kick, round kick. So it's like I said, jazz. It's that.
Yeah.
Bass. Doom, 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 doom. I'm going to do it again, bro.
How many movies do we see where somebody's punching someone in the face and you're over the shoulder and they're like this? And this is what you would call being stacked.
So that's right.
The frame have we filled? Nothing. That's right. The middle.
You've got all this negative space here and here, right?
Yeah. It's easy to sell the punch, but what you want to do is get the two guys like this.
Yeah.
Now sell the punch.
Yes.
The movement. You fill the frame with beautiful balletic action.
That's beautiful, baby. I love it.
Can I ask, are you a fan of Hong Kong cinema before Jackie Chan, when it was kind of like, you know, the choo choo bop
bit,
but the old school brother stuff.
I absolutely used to ditch school all through junior high school and even elementary school, go downtown and go to Kung Fu Theater and pay 50 cents and watch those same two movies all day and try to get home before my grandparents so I didn't get whipped for ditching school. I did it constantly. But I feel that those movies in the 70s, post Bruce Lee, pre Jackie Chan, hurt martial arts because it was not real snake style. You know, it was something made up for camera, and all of a sudden you go to tournaments and there was guys doing fucking snake style. You know, it was like, it was fake. So I feel like that generation or that period misinformed martial arts. For me, when you see Jackie Chan from after that period, when he started coming, like Young Hyena and Drunken Master, the first one, then when he gets to Project A, you see this evolution of how he starts to change the rhythm.
Wasn't it? Police Story is where it changed, in my mind. He started editing more.
I think, like, if you watch Project A Part 1, you see big, nasty wrecks. Like, he was really influenced by Buster Keaton, and as we all are, you know, the original stuntman, the original stunt actor. Yeah. And watching him in those movies, for me, where the stuntman and the action becomes the star of it, I was such a huge fan. I saw Armor of God in Korea when I was stationed there. And when he fights the girls, and the girl jumps down, and he round kicks her and suicides her. And then he punched the girl in the flip in the suicide land. Bro, I stood up in the theater and was like, oh, my God. And all the Koreans were always, hey, sit down, dummy. You know, like, it was a moment for me where I was totally drawn into the real impacts. And it was very it influenced. It was a big influence on me. Yeah, I just came and I helped with this part. Like, Alan Poppleton had that show, and I only helped with this opening business right here. And we shot that in Thailand, which was a lot of fun. That was actually on a green screen stage. It wasn't even in – we weren't even exterior. We're interior. But, yeah, it was kind of a tool fest, like just smacking fools up.
This is a hard hit right there. For Brahim, look. Did he throw himself into that really hard, or was Statham giving him a helping hand?
Well, you know, I have a way of getting people wound up pretty proper, because I could tell Brahim was a little nervous to mess with Statham the first time. And I just said, don't make eye contact. Don't show your teeth. Don't wear any cologne. He bites. Don't stare. And, you know, he's like, oh, and I said, hey, listen, little bro. You got to, like, even when he takes that hit, he gets nailed and does a 3/4 under the table. I was like, hey, man, you're going to have to take one for the team here, baby. You got to go big. It's Statham. You know, like, and he did. He killed it. Jason Statham, we're the same age. So I understand him. Like, we probably listen to the same music as kids. And Jason was also on the British national team for diving. So when you compete in any sport on a very high level like that, you know, where it's, you have one chance to show, like, it's not like fighting, it's different, like gymnastics and diving. And that's like, everything has to happen in this one try. It's a tremendous amount of pressure. So he is used to dealing with extreme pressure. It's not foreign to him. And he's got a tremendous sense of focus. And he has it. You can't fool him. Like, a lot of actors, like, oh, yeah, dude, he's going to do a front 3/4. You do this, it's going to be great. And they'll be like, oh, awesome. Yeah. Jason's, he's not having it. Like, he trains at our shop at 8711. He does Muay Thai. He does jiu-jitsu. He does judo. We're taking him to the gun range on Friday and shooting with him. He's well-versed. And he's going to make everyone work as hard as they can, including himself, to make it perfect. And I really admire that about him. That's one of the reasons that I keep wanting to work with him, because he keeps a very high standard for himself and for everyone else.
I mean, when I worked with him on Expendables 2, I could see that he was very particular about wanting it to be as good as it could be. And I remember him doing about, I don't know, 20 takes of this one movie.
No, he'll go until he gets it right. And, you know, like, listen, Corey Yuen, I also did two movies with Corey Yuen as well. Corey Yuen was one of his action mentors, because he did the Transporter series. And Corey Yuen directed it, or did the action on it or something.
Action director.
So he got used to that style, because Corey Yuen will make you do it. He'll make you do it till you get it right. But that's where he got that kind of style, where he's not just looking at what he's doing. He's looking at what all of the other people are doing in the frame. And he's got a filmmaker's mindset for that. Like, you know, like a lot of people, when you're on set and you're watching the monitors as a director, It's easy just to focus what's happening in the foreground, especially when you're looking at a monitor about the same size as an iPad. But then when you think about that, my movie might be played on a screen in a movie theater. You have to be very careful what's happening in the background. You could have somebody, a guy in the background picking his nose or, you know, like, oh, all over the place. So Jason will see what the guy in the very, very back, he'll know what that guy's even thinking. He's, what's that guy thinking, right? You know, it's like he knows when some, like, you can't bullshit him. And I'm a big fan of that, that attention to detail. And that's one of the things that, you know, makes him great, makes him Jason Statham, man.
Yeah, the Stath.
That's right. He's a Chelsea fan. He's the one who gave me that Chelsea jersey.
Oh, I don't like him anymore then.
Josh Brolin is as hard as a mason jar full of rusty nails. I love that guy. I love his voice. I think he's a great actor and he's a great bro. This was a real wonder. Spike Lee said, no tricks. And I was like, come on, man, let's do a white cut or do something. He goes, no tricks. It was a real wonder the way that the original Old Boy was. And, you know, I know people bagged on it a bit, but I was quite proud of this one, man. I thought the guys, the stunt team on that did a great job.
To do it for real. What a job by him.
Brother, we rehearsed that for like 4 weeks every weekend. I was on a Statham film there called Homefront. So I was doing both movies. So we rehearsed this on the weekends because I was shooting Homefront Monday through Friday. Look at this camera move. This is on a techno crane that's mounted on the back of a truck that goes, it's pickling in and out, but the truck has to drive at a certain point when he's going down the stairs. You'll see in a minute, when he starts going down the stairs, the truck starts to drive out so they can get more reach on the, it's a very technical shot. The things you don't see are probably as technical or more technical as what you're seeing right now. I think we had like 18 people there, and then we made it look like we had 36 people. So the guys on the top floor, as soon as he goes down the stairs, they ran downstairs, changed their clothes, and went to the third floor. As soon as he gets done with these guys, they run and go down to the bottom floor and change clothes because it wasn't a big budget movie. So he had to be very clever how he did it.
And he's taken a few hits in this, Brolin, as well.
I mean, he got smacked proper a minute ago when he threw the guy off the fence and the guy kicked him in the face on accident. Here, this one.
Well, that's
face. Bang! Right there. Right in the jaw. And it made a sound. I was downstairs on a microphone and I could hear that hit right there. Bop!
Bop. And he didn't miss a step.
That fool is tough as a mason jar full of rusty nails. He's a damn cowboy, hard as nails kid. I think we had to get ice for, that was Greg Remender. We had to get ice for Greg Remender's foot, I think, after that. Just kidding.
Oh, the shank in the back.
Yep.
So how many takes did you do of this?
Seven. I think the seventh was the one we kept. And I'd call cut. If it was falling apart, I'd call cut away. That's Kenny Waymack kicking a beating with a stick.
How many times
call
did
cut
you go
right away
fight from beginning to end? And why did they cut it then?
Yeah, so they cut. I wish you had the long version. It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
But the long version was my favorite part. Like the top shot, because there's a long top shot there.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, it was super cool. Like it was because it was there was no cut. It was a 4-minute and 28-second oneer, I think it was what it ended up being.
Do you know why there was a cut put in there?
I don't know. I didn't ask. I mean, I was disappointed. I was doing John Wick 1 in New York when they screened this in New York, and I went and watched it. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh man. And Spike and Josh were like, yeah, man, we're really bummed out that this, I guess the studio made him do it.
So just to talk about the style of John Wick. Well, I mean, for me, knowing you and seeing some of the stuff that 8711 had been doing, I kept seeing shades of John Wick going all the way back to like The Safe, really.
That's where that style was invented. So when I got finished doing Warrior, I had all these like Lucha Libre moves and MMA moves that I never used. And all the guys were doing jiu-jitsu and judo. You know, Chad is an amazing martial artist, and he had Dave Leach was, you know, everybody was there. And John Eusebio, John Valera, that whole team was compiling ideas. Now, while I was doing Warrior in Pittsburgh, I was also going to a gun range there because I was in the Army, so I was already really good with a rifle, but I started playing around with a pistol a lot more. And I kept thinking to myself, like with the jiu-jitsu stuff, how can we make the jiu-jitsu not as like use each limb, not as a submission, but use it as a lever to transition to a move where we can pull the pistol and work the pistol a bit. And, you know, from Safe, and I don't know if you have the Safe videos, the one from Safe with Statham. We came up with a lot of the John Wick style stuff back in 2009. No, it was 2010 or 11 when we did it.
I saw it in 2010, I think.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. And unfortunately, we didn't do it on Safe, but we all put that in our back pocket. Yeah. And Wick was the first one when I heard they were going to direct a film, and I knew that that was the style that was going to be used, because MMA was so prominent and jiu-jitsu is so prominent now. And then gun work has, listen, I think Hollywood misinformed gun work to the whole world. You know, if you look at all the old movies like Charlie's Angels, they back up to a corner and they hold the gun like this, and the bad guy's behind them. Like, yeah, you know, I gotta be careful. And you know why they do it? Because they want the camera to see their face and they can see the threat and see the gun. But when you're really doing it, the muzzle of the gun has to be facing the threat.
You have to be like this sliding down the banister, aren't you?
Listen, I love John Woo. Yeah. I still watch Killer and I still watch Hard Boiled religiously.
Yeah,
but I don't know how those Chinese guys get 1,000 bullets in those magazines. I want to get. I want one of those guns. John Wick.
That's great. One of the good things about John Wick.
Yep.
And, the mag.
I helped out with the club fight in John Wick. I was finishing up Expendables 3, and Chad called me and said, "Hey, can you come to New York and help us out with this club scene?" And I went down there and I made some. I helped him out a little bit with the pistol work and you know, the choreography was tight, and we did a really good thing there. And then after John Wick 1, when Chad got John Wick 2, he said, "Well, what do you think? How can we make Wick 2 better than Wick 1?" I was like, "Well, I don't know. Like, from a management standpoint, I think we have to make Reeves better. I mean, we're going to rely heavily on him, so we train him harder. Take him to let's improve his gun work tenfold." So we took him out to a gun range, a tactical gun range, Taron Butler's range, where we've been going to since 2015, since we took Reeves out there. The guy's a 14-time World 3 Gun Champion. If you look him up, Taron Tactical or Taron Butler, it's amazing. Like, he's like the Michael Jordan of shooting. And you wouldn't imagine it. You wouldn't know it when you look at him. He's a big, big fella. But he moves really fast, and he shoots like it's almost like he can see the shots three. He can see the shots four shots ahead. And he really helped us. That range was a very cool interactive range where we could lend it to choreography. Like, you set up a range where he shoots 17 targets and does a reload and shoots two more, which is like choreography. Have him run that three times. Now you change the course. Exactly like choreography. Three takes, cut, next moves, next one. So he became so proficient in target acquisition and reloading and chamber checking and correcting malfunctions with rifle, shotgun, and pistol.
The shotgun reloading was impressive.
Man, really. We shot that sequence in the tunnels of Caracalla, which was in Rome. And it was like in November in Rome, in these tunnels, these ancient tunnels that used to be baths. And it was cold and his hands were cold. And, you know, like, just keeping them warm and it's really not easy to reload. You know, it's very difficult. And I was really proud of that movie. I was super proud of that movie.
It's very difficult to come up with a new style. John Woo did it. Michael Mann did it with Heat. But the style in John Wick, which I was seeing you guys at 8-7-11 putting together way before that.
Yeah, man. So,
I was surprised that it hadn't been seen sooner. But
listen, that place, the laboratory, 8-7-11, is this laboratory of test and prove, and some of the best martial artists, trickers, free runners, gymnasts, movement people. We get them in there and we just come up with ideas constantly. And, you know, like John Eusebio, John Valera, Danny Hernandez, Justin Yu, Jeremy Marinas, Danny Graham, Manish Sherfa, Jackson Spidell. I mean, I can go on and on. You know, there's some mega hitters that come out of there. Like, Sam Hargrave started there. Yeah. Larnell Stovall started there, my little brothers. And Phil Silvera, he was working out there too. You know, that place has seen every face that's prominent. You know, like, when Brad Allen would be in town back in the day, he used to roll through. Damian Walters used to roll through. Like, you know, like, that was a really, it was, and you've been through there too, you know. Yeah. You know, it's like really the, a mecca of action.
Hey, listen, JJ, thanks for giving us your time, mate. So much knowledge, so much know-how. One of the best guys to do it. And just personally, mate, I want to say thank you, because you gave me a real chance with Undisputed 2. What we did there. And you've done a lot for me, mate. I really appreciate it.
Scott, I'm your biggest fan, Holmes. I'm always, dude, I'm the biggest cheerleader. I'm the biggest Scott Atkins cheerleader. I always, you know, trying to get you to Serbia, trying to get you on everything. pretty soon.
Yeah, but don't say that because you'll have no excuse when you're director.
I'll have my own, and I got you. But be careful. Be careful what you wish for, dog.
Oh, yeah. I might get a foot in the face.
Right on, brother. I love you, bro. Thanks.
Thanks, JJ. Thanks for doing this, buddy.